Most of the people who had not gone to church were indoors. Seldom was someone sitting out on the porch, and no one worked in the gardens or chopped wood in the yard. Horses and mules were grazing in the pastures beside and behind the houses, but that was about as much movement as you saw. Above, a low, ashen sky loomed over the plantation, if not over the entire state of Louisiana. A swarm of blackbirds flew across the road and alighted in a pecan tree in one of the back yards to our left. The entire plantation was deadly quiet, except for the singing coming from the church up the quarter behind us. We crossed the railroad tracks and turned right. In front of us were three or four boxcars of sugarcane, waiting to be picked up by a train and taken to the mill. We could also see the weighing scales left of the full boxcars and the derrick that lifted the cane from wagons and trailers and swung it onto the boxcars. Left of the weighing scales and the derrick was the plantation cemetery, where my ancestors had been buried for the past century. The cemetery had lots of trees in it, pecans and oaks, and it was weedy, too. And since there were so few gravestones, it was pretty hard to see many graves from the road. Just before we came up to the cemetery, we turned left on a road that would take us farther into the field. This was Vivian's first time back here, and I told her that my people had worked these fields ever since slavery, and many of them were buried in the cemetery behind us. I asked her if she wanted a piece of cane, and she said yes. I jumped over the ditch and crossed a couple of rows until I found a good stalk. Then I came back to where she was waiting for me. I cut off the first two joints and threw them away. They didn't look sweet enough. Then I peeled the third joint and tasted it. It was good. I cut off a round and gave it to Vivian. She chewed it and let some of the juice run down her chin, the way a small child would do. The small child would not have been able to help it, but she could. I cut off a round for myself and chewed it. It was very soft, very sweet. We chewed cane and walked the road for at least 3/4 of a mile. Just before coming up to the gate that would lead into the swamp, I noticed a pecan tree to our right. I had picked pecans under that tree many times, and I suggested we go over there and see if we could find some. The tree stood at the headland of the cane field. We searched for pecans in the grass on the headland and down between the rows of cane. We found a couple of dozen big ones, big and soft-shelled, and I cracked them by squeezing two together. I gave Vivian one half, and I kept the other. We sat under the tree, and I cracked pecans for both of us. Suddenly, we were too quiet. "You want me here?" Vivian asked. I was not looking at her when she said it, and I could tell by her voice that she was not looking directly at me. "Yes," I said. She had been gazing down at the ground. Now she raised her eyes to me. "That's what I want, too," she said. "I love you, Vivian," I said. "I want you to know that. I love you very much. I hope you love me half as much as I love you." I left her for a while, and when I came back, I saw that she had moved farther down between the rows where the cane would hide us better. She had taken off everything except her brassiere and slip. I took off everything except the heavy shirt, which I unbuttoned. Vivian raised her arms up and out to me as I lay down beside her. I lay on my side and touched her brown nipples with my finger. Then I leaned over and kissed each tenderly and raised up and looked at her. She was smiling at me. I went back and passed my tongue over each and I kissed each again and rubbed my chin over them. My beard must have been rough because I could feel her drawing away some. But when I looked at her, she was smiling again. I smiled back at her. "I think something happened," she said. "What do you mean?" "I have a strange feeling." I looked at her, and I felt happy, but my face must have changed. "What is the matter?" she asked. "Nothing." "But you frowned." "I'm happy." "But you frowned when I said it." "Maybe I was just thinking. I don't know if I want Paul to grow up here." "Don't spoil it," she said. "It's been too good. Don't spoil it." I'm sorry, sweetheart. And suppose it's Molly? No, it's Paul. It could be Molly. Molly Wiggins. I don't know if I like that name. You think it's a good name, Molly Wiggins? Sounds okay. Sounds kind of whorish to me. Molly Wiggins. Then let her decide. If she likes it, we'll keep it. If she doesn't, we'll call her Paulette. Paul and Paulette. That sounds good. Maybe I'll have twins. If not, we'll go till there is a Paulette. She may be first. Then we'll go till there is Paul, I said. You ought to put on something. You might catch cold. Not if you hold me close. Not if you put that shirt round both of us. I lay upon her, kissing her hair, her eyes, her nose, her mouth.